in God's name do you need a solvent for except to kill someone?
That's an outrageous slur.
Google it, mate.
The only way that you can preserve peace is to prepare for war.
Views on News with Mark Latham. Mark Latham.
It's been a while. Mark Latham joins me this afternoon on the phone to talk about all sorts of different things. Good afternoon, Mark.
Brent, it's great to be talking to you and great to hear that you're back and firing on all cylinders.
We are, yeah. Let's get stuck into it. Well, he's got the nickname Airbus Albo. But I've got to say, I mean, yes, he's been to, 19, is it, plus and counting different countries. But when you look at the stories, a lot of prime ministers have done the same sort of thing in years gone by, haven't they, Mark?
Well, that's true, and you expect the prime minister to have a personal relationship with major countries around the world. He has done a lot of travel. I think back in the day, I might have first suggested he was Airbus Albo. It's a tag that'll probably stick. But if he's doing good work in a place like China, where a personal relationship with their leader matters to Australia, that's a good thing. I don't know exactly what he'll achieve in the Cook Islands. He probably has travelled a bit much, but overall, he's done a lot better on the foreign policy front than he has domestically with, you know, obviously the catastrophe of the voice and all the cost of living problems. So he probably enjoys the travel because it seems to be his forte.
We haven't had a chance to talk about the voice, obviously, because I was away. I know it's in the past. But can I ask you your opinion on what seems to be happening in different states? Look, there was a resounding no right across Australia from almost every state apart from the ACT. What's your take on the fact that there are certain states the premiers are now wanting to still move forward in reference to this treaty situation?
Well, the treaty is a bit different to the voice. We always thought if they had a voice in the Australian Constitution, it would lead to a treaty. In defence of Chris Minns in New South Wales, it was an election process and policy to move towards a treaty, but nobody really knows what the treaty means, Brent. You see, like the real guts of Indigenous policy is how do you solve these chronic problems of child sexual abuse, welfare dependency, drug and alcohol abuse, school truancy, things that are wrecking lives. So setting up a committee to talk about a treaty, what's actually in the treaty? What haven't we done for Indigenous? We've got federal and state land rights. We've had the apology. We've had the referendum where people said no. I just don't know what a treaty actually says other than some symbolic thing that says, oh, well, you know, colonisation wasn't great. I don't agree with that, but, you know, they'll say colonisation wasn't great and Indigenous were the traditional landowners in Australia. Well, we sort of know that from the Mabo decision. So I don't know where's the guts of a treaty. What's it actually mean in practice? In Victoria, they've been going for 7 years now in consultation with a treaty and not come up with a firm document. So I think this is a bit like the voice. It's a distraction from the real problems that are destroying young Indigenous lives in Western New South Wales and Alice Springs and other sinkholes every night. So I'd rather see government focus on real people and real problems instead of legal documents that really don't count for much.
Let's jump back to Albo for a moment. He's just appeared on the TV screen in my studio here, dressed in his Hawaiian shirt at the Cook Islands. The Pacific Island leaders have urged Albo to curb Australia's fossil fuel projects because of concerns over climate change. Do you think he'll listen to what they are saying?
Well, they're after more money. Normally it's an argument for more money for the Pacific Islands that have got economic and integrity problems in their governance. There's no evidence that the sea levels are rising at some dramatic rate, that these islands are sinking into the ocean. I remember Al Gore and even Bill Clinton talking about the advent of climate refugees. We don't see any of that. So I think it's an amber claim for money more than something that stacks up in substance. Relations with our South Pacific Island partners and neighbours are very important because of the rise of China. China throws a lot of money at these countries to try to buy them off. Australia can't match that financial largesse, but a personal relationship between our Prime Minister and the island leaders is important. And if Albanese achieves that, that's good, but I wouldn't be giving them any money.
More than 200 ABC journalists, this happened yesterday afternoon, it was a Wednesday afternoon meeting, more than 200 ABC journalists participated in this mass meeting about the public broadcaster's coverage of the war in Gaza, with a number of grievances raised leading to a possible shift in how the conflict is reported, according to several people who attended. What's all this mean, Mark?
It shows that the ABC is more about political bias of the journalist than actually reporting the facts. The facts are that Israel suffered a dreadful terrorist attack on the 7th of October. And if we go back to September 11 in the United States, there was no international sympathy for Osama bin Laden and the Taliban. Everyone said wipe them out because they're terrorists. Well, obviously, Israel's got a right to defend itself and to wipe out the terrorists, just as we did with the Taliban and to a substantial degree, ISIS. So if ABC journalists want to think that it's valid to report about Israel as the problem here, what they want to do, Brent, is report Israel is the problem with genocide and apartheid and ethnic cleansing, and they want those to be legitimate terms used against Israel in this particular conflict. Well, they've got to report the facts, and the facts are that Hamas is a terrorist organisation, along with Islamic Jihad and Hezbollah in the Middle East. And the sooner we rid the world of terrorist organisations, the better and safer we will all be. So this is just the political bias of ABC journalists pushing through instead of sticking to their charter, which is simply report the facts.
The Gaza conflict is testing the limits of freedom of speech on campus at the Sydney University. They've warned that it won't tolerate support of Hamas attack, and the vice chancellor moved to actually ban a pro-Palestinian student meeting.
Well, Mark Scott, the vice chancellor there, has done something that's eminently sensible. Imagine after September 11, if on our university campuses or the public broadcaster or anywhere else, it was a legitimate comment to say three cheers for the Taliban, three cheers for Osama bin Laden for knocking down the Twin Towers, killing umpteen Australians and other international citizens. I mean, it would have been unthinkable. So how is this any different? See, the problem with the Palestine-Israel conflict is that people will always have a set against Israel. But you've got to attend to what actually happened on the 7th of October, which was a dreadful premeditated terrorist attack, killing babies, taking hostages, wiping out over 200 young people going to a music festival. This is barbarism that we should all condemn. So the fact that Mark Scott, unusually for a university leader, has stood up and said what's sensible and fair and decent is a good thing for him. He shouldn't tolerate protests on his campus in favour of Hamas, just as we shouldn't be tolerating any protests in Australia that encourage and enable terrorists to do their worst.
Now, look, this story seems to change almost daily. I note the headline in one of the local papers today says, Halen rocked by more jobs for mates controversy. What's the latest story on the Transport Minister, Joe Halen?
Well, this is the third instance of trying to politicise her department and office after Chris Finn said they'll have very high standards of integrity, no jobs for the boys or girls, everyone will have a job on merit. We had the dubious appointment of a Labor person as the head of the Department of Transport. We had the resignation of her chief of staff, Scott Gartrell, after the department person in Joe Halen's office was doing political work that they shouldn't have been doing. And now there's a third suggestion that she's tried to create a senior public service position for someone she wanted to nominate, possibly from a Labor Party background, again going down this political path. So, you know, you can be political and run all these departments and offices according to politics, but don't give us the baloney that Chris Minns did before the last election, that Labor would have new high standards of no jobs for the boys and girls, because Joe Halen has been breaching that, and really I think it's third strike and she should be out.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, do you think she should be out? Look, it seems as though that won't be the case, because any opportunity that Chris Minns gets, he stands up and supports Joe Halen.
Well, she's part of what they call the hard left faction inside the Labor Party that supported Minns for the leadership. He needs her numbers to stay in the job. He's under attack because he's a bit of a do-nothing premier who's defending the indefensible. So he needs Joe Halen. But if he stuck to that pre-election rhetoric, remember all that rhetoric about John Barilaro? John Barilaro, who quite frankly wasn't that bad an appointment to be the trade commissioner for New South Wales in New York. They said, oh, because he's from a political party, the National Party can't have the job. So Chris Minns has got to be held to his own rhetoric. He's failing to do that, and his honeymoon as Premier is well and truly ended.
True. Interest rates went up this week to the shock of, not to the shock of many economists. It's, again, a Melbourne Cup Day rise. It's now 4.35% is the cash rate. Gee whiz, this is going to hit hard for many, many mortgage people that are doing it tough already. It's now going to... I mean, when we were looking at some of the figures, Mark, let me just bring up the information that I've got here so I get it exactly right. As a result of the interest increase on Tuesday afternoon, if you've got an average home loan, which is $750,000, since May last year, each month now with rate increases, you've had to find an extra $1,815.
Well, it's a double whammy. We haven't got enough housing supply, so the prices go up. And at the same time, the price of money, the price of getting a home loan has gone up because of these interest rate rises. So, you know, Brent, we've talked about this over a long period of time. A couple of years ago, the Reserve Bank was asleep at the wheel. You could see the post-COVID inflation coming. They needed three or four sharp interest rate rises instead of the huge number we've had. Hopefully, this is the last one of them. Philip Lowe, the former governor of the Reserve Bank, is gone. Hopefully, the new administration there understands that inflation is trending down. This should be the last of the interest rate rises. But more importantly, I suppose, going forward, we need more housing stock supply so that young people in particular have got a chance to literally get a foot in the door.
Your take on the Optus saga today. We're told that, for what happened yesterday, that primarily customers aren't going to be given any compensation whatsoever. That was what was happening when I came on air at midday today. I don't think it's changed. Can you believe that? I mean, surely not.
Well, the company said the compensation would be less than $2 per customer. That's hard to believe for businesses that were closed down and dysfunctional for most of yesterday, isn't it? Less than $2 lost trade, that's an insult to those businesses. So, thankfully I'm not an Optus customer, but for those who are, this has been horrendous. It just shows you how reliant we are on these technologies when they malfunction. Businesses lose a lot, and I would have thought Optus would be wise to say, look, for your normal residential phone, mobile phone customer, okay, maybe it is less than $2, but for a small business in particular, it's a lot more, and they should be compensated. But what happens in the way of the market economy, people who've been dudded by Optus simply go to a different service provider, as they should. And Optus has had a number of problems, and for a lot of people, this is the last straw.
I had an example this afternoon on the phone. A gentleman called us, and he's got three small businesses, a pub on the south coast and two coffee shops, and we went through the figures. And just yesterday, in reference to revenue that he lost, was totaling around about $6,000 to $7,000. That's just one operator. And it was all because people weren't coming in buying lunches, going to restaurants because they couldn't pay for the darn thing. They weren't coming into the coffee shops and buying coffee because they couldn't pay for the darn thing.
Well, it's a lot more than $2, isn't it? And Optus would be well advised to say, look, we've made a mistake here in failing to get out with early information about the technology problem, the collapse of their system. And they also made a mistake in saying they won't pay compensation. What they should say is, if you're running a business and you can show us the lost revenue, like $6,000 or $7,000 at this coffee shop that you've mentioned, Optus will pay compensation. Otherwise, they lose customers, and people move on to a more reliable service provider. So Optus is showing an arrogance here that defies their position in a competitive market where, you know, obviously other companies will be trying to take their customers away, as they should.
Let me see. We're talking about, well, cricket we are. And I see that Glenn Maxwell blasted 21 fours and 10 sixes in his innings. It was incredible.
Well, it's one of the most amazing things you'll see, not only on a cricket field, but any sporting contest and an arena. Like a lot of people, I went to bed when Australia was collapsing. They were 7 for 91 and needed 200 to win the match thereafter, and somehow Maxwell batting basically on one leg. You remember, we all did this when we were kids, Brent, French cricket,
yes,
where you couldn't move your legs?
Yeah, I do.
Hit the ball without moving your legs. Well, that's what he did. He was playing and hitting fours and sixes all over the park without moving his feet, and it's one of the most remarkable things you'll ever see. The guy's an absolute freak. We knew that from the very fast record century scored earlier in the tournament. But this one, the double hundred, the first ever by an Australian in one-day cricket, was something we'll just basically never see the like of it again. So Glenn Maxwell, he's copped a lot of bagging. I've probably been a critic of his, saying he doesn't deliver when it's needed. But boy, against Afghanistan, he was our saviour, and it was one of the most remarkable things you'll ever see on a sporting field.
Now, Australian star Kate Blanchett took aim at Australia as she urged the European Union to focus on the protection of refugees and not on fortifying borders. It's a long story, but she was having a crack at Australia, and I don't know about you, but I'm sick and tired of these overpaid actors or actresses, having an opinion. She's been with them a long time, though, hasn't she, with the EU?
She has, but it's probably a reference to the Gaza refugees that are now mounting up. Has Australia got a responsibility to take people out of the Gaza beyond our normal refugee intake? No, we haven't. It's a matter for countries much bigger than ours, a lot closer to the Middle East, particularly Europe and North America. So she's probably angling at humanitarian intake from Gaza. But, the truth of Australia's refugee policy is it relies on very strong borders. We're lucky to be an island, but we're unlucky that Indonesia, facilitated all that people smuggling in the time of the Rudd and Gillard governments. That wasn't an act of humanitarian care. It resulted in over 1,200 people, including in women and children, drowning at sea as those leaky boats sank. So it's not humanitarian to encourage a bigger refugee intake if it encourages people smuggling. We should stick to what we've done well over the past decade, which is strong borders, an orderly intake on the basis of need, and where people can be moved back to their host country because the circumstances have changed. Well, that's a good thing too.
All right, Mark. Thanks, mate. It's great to catch up with you. I enjoy our chat as always. You're healthy, you're fit.
Yeah, I am. More importantly, Brent, how are you going? Because you're off air because of those health concerns. They're all in the past.
Oh, I've now got, as I call it, the bionic ear. I've got the cochlear implant done, and we're getting used to it slowly but surely, Mark.
That's great to hear. We need you, and it's always a delight to speak on a Thursday, and hopefully we'll do that for a good time to come.
Okay, mate. I'll talk to you next Thursday, Mark.
All the best.
Have a good week. See you, mate. Bye-bye. Mark Latham joining us this afternoon.